Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, today's show is all about the power of transformation, from cleaning out your head trash to developing an effortless mind. In the second half of today's show, we'll be joined by someone I see almost every week, but I've never actually had a conversation with. And the reason for that is I'm usually rushing out of the studio as he is rushing into the studio. So I'm talking about fellow KKN host Jayan Boris, who's written a book called Effortless Mind, which I really like. He's going to share some of his insights from 40 plus years of exploring, practicing and teaching meditation to thousands of students across the world. And that's coming up around 12:30. But first, I'm pleased to welcome Trish Squilero. She's one of the duo that wrote Head Trash. She's been an entrepreneur for many years. And drawing on a broad range of disciplines, she's particular expertise in change management process and business strategy, as well as behavioral and organizational dynamics. She's known as the CEO Whisperer and says, "I can't imagine there isn't a way. Everything is achievable." Welcome to the show, Trish Squilero.
Thanks, Vicki, and thanks for having.
Did I say your name right there? I blanked on the pronunciation.
Not a problem. It's Trish Squilero.
Okay.
But you can call me Trish. I'll still answer.
We were close, Squilero. Squilero is what I was worried about. So, Trish, tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit more about your background and how you came to this place. I know that you've been an entrepreneur most of your life. You've even had a doggy daywalking business at one point. You met Timothy Thomas, who's the co-author of this book. But tell us, and that's how this head trash came out, but tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are.
Sure. You know, you never know where a path's going to take you. So for me, it was one of those curvy roads where the decisions you make, and you don't realize it at the time, are taking you to your next adventure. But my background is rather entrepreneurial, or I like to think of myself as a self-starter. I've probably worked for myself for the last 12 years, always around people management or advice giving or even just good listening. And it wasn't anything I picked up in college, so I learned a lot about understanding the different disciplines and behaviors through my psychology classes. Never did I thought it would become my full-time career and passion. But I grew up in New York. I moved to Pennsylvania to go to school. I have two little kids, 8 and 9, which definitely developed the different trash styles that you have as a parent. And I met Tim on a project that we were both working on the senior leadership team from a different angle. And when we started to work together to help the organization, we realized that we had a lot in common and that we would be spending time together. So we started to get to know each other. And from that, it evolved a great relationship, which then ensued one day sitting in a room thinking about how to help a client work on a very difficult decision they had to make. And one of the things Tim mentioned was, you know, it's really this head trash, this clouding in their head. I bet that's what's stopping them. And I said, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly what it is. And I bet they're not the only person experiencing it. When you have to make a decision, it's always emotions involved. How do you get through it? And 3 years later, we put our book together, and here we are.
There you go. And you wrote this from a business perspective for leaders in the business workplace. But you and I both know that this applies to people across the board, at home, at play. Talk to us a little bit about that.
It is. You know, it's funny. When we started to write the book, it really was going to be focused on business decision making because that's where our stories came from. That's the examples we started to provide. But as we got to the finishing touches of the book, it's written with such practical, logical tools and tips of ways to change the way you're going to think through something. But it's really about decision making. So it's for anyone and everyone that's in the process of making a decision. It could be a family decision. It could be a work decision. It could even be a personal career decision that you choose to make. These emotions will be there. So this book really is for anyone.
Right. And you identified 7 emotions that muddy our thinking. Key emotions are fear, insecurity, control, paranoia, arrogance, anger, and guilt. Why did you pick out those 7? I mean, presumably that's what you saw coming up time and time again as you were working with clients.
Exactly. But as we started to pull it together, I have to admit, there were a variety of other emotions that we looked at because we wanted to really come up with something that encompassed where the getting you stuck scenarios come from. But when we narrowed down the root cause, the thing that really gave people that noise that stopped them in their tracks from really thinking clearly, these 7 were defined each and every time. We like to call them felons in the book because they pop up. They're in your subconscious because they're something that's talking to you to make you feel a certain way. And these 7 continuously, as we went through the different scenarios, are the ones that we found.
And you talk about, I love this, a potentially lethal head trash cocktail. Because most people, depending on the situations, can behave differently. We're not just going to be locked into one of these 7 emotions primarily.
Correct. And you know what? We're about looking at things in a way in which you can really digest it. And what I mean by that is you have to have a sense of humor. You have to look at things and give yourself some glimpse of recognizing we're all human and we're not perfect. So when we put the book together, these cocktails are because these 7 emotions are everyday emotions that are healthy emotions when they're not overtaking your thinking. So all 7 emotions that you'll never get rid of, and in fact, you don't want to. You need to have these emotions because they will help you navigate your choice making.
Right.
But they're also the same ones when they become what we call head trash. That's because they're controlling you now. You're no longer controlling them.
Right.
And a cocktail is a combination. So for an example, you could be working with someone or having a discussion with someone who tends to be a little sure of themselves to the point of arrogance. But I bet their cocktail could be insecurity with a little splash of arrogance or vice versa. Because there could be an element of certain head trashes that when combined, there's a reason for why these things are happening or why these people are thinking this way.
Right. And that's a great segue because that's the one I wanted to look at first was insecurity. I work with a wide range of people and have done for, you know, many years. And the number one thing that I see quite often is that insecurity, and it comes up in so many different ways. It can come out in arrogance, as you said. But you say insecurity is the most crippling emotion. So tell us why.
Well, Kim and I believe it's the most crippling because it's the voice that's really controlling your mindset on your capabilities. And we also refer to it as the imposter feeling or the imposter theory, because when you don't feel as if you really belong there because of your capabilities or your experience, you will convince yourself that you shouldn't be there, which then in turn will predict how you behave externally. You may not be sure to give good answers. You might not give good direction. You'll second guess every decision you make. And that insecurity is your own. It's caused by yourself. And that is why we find it the most crippling, because it's that same now person who has to then revamp their thinking by saying, wait a second, that's not true. I am capable.
Right.
Hold on. I can do this. So it's really embodying in the mind to kind of work on that one head trash that I find the most crippling, and why I think when you look at the cocktails, they're the ones that usually have a combination of that. It's because when they are then reacting to something, it then causes another head trash to come into play.
Mm-hmm.
Could be guilt, right? It could be anger, but it stems from the insecurity.
Yeah, you share in the book, I love this, FBI, 5 fatal behaviors of the insecure. And one of them is, and I've seen this a lot in various situations, where people tear others down to build themselves up. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I think that's exceptionally damaging.
Well, and it is, right? Because when you are concerned that you're not the smartest person in the room, or you're not the one who's going to have all the answers, and there is someone else in the group or on the team that does, well, one way to make that other person feel as if they don't have the right answer or that you knew the right answer is to tear that other person down, is to make that other person feel that they're not the one who has the right answer. And that alone makes that other person who has the actual insecurity look good, which in turn makes them think that no one realizes that they didn't know the answer. So it's a way to camouflage how they're doing something or not doing something.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Tish, I'm going to ask you how we can counteract that, how we deal with somebody who's insecure. If we're insecure ourselves, how we learn to deal with our insecurities. My guest is Tish Squilaro. Her book is called Head Trash, Cleaning Out the Junk That Stands Between You and Success. And she co-authored this with her business partner, Timothy I. Thomas. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Trash. Oh, pick it up. Take down like your way. Trash. Better pick it up. Take your life away. Trash.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Coming in May on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We all need friends in life, but sometimes the people you call friends are the ones who drive you crazy, and you may not even realize it. We'll share how to spot the crazy makers in your life and how to reduce the stress and drama of dealing with them. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And check out conversationslive.net for more than 200 podcasts with experts who can help you live well, live strong.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Let's pick it up. Take that back your way. Try it. You got to get it up. Don't you throw your love away.
And welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. I'm talking in this segment with Tish Squilaro. Her book is called Head Trash, Cleaning Out the Junk That Stands Between You and Success. And this was co-authored with her partner, Timothy I. Thomas. And before the break, I'd asked Tish about insecure leaders, people who are insecure in general. And Tish, you have five habits to practice as you reprogram inaccurate self-trashing into appropriate self-respecting, because that's what it's all about. You talk about embracing compliments, feeding your noisy brain with the right stuff, stopping comparing, accentuating the positive, and doing it for the team. So just give us a synopsis of that, if you would.
Sure. And Head Trash really has a simple and practical to-do list for each and every Head Trash. So if you were to pick up the book, you can see that if one of those seem to be more in line where you see yourself getting stuck, each chapter will give you practical tools to look at. So for insecurity, you know, really one of the things I find the most amazing is insecure people have a terrible time taking compliments. And that's the first step. Be comfortable with someone saying to you, hey, you did a great job on that. And that's one of the things about embracing it, because if you start with a kernel of thinking about things differently and not allowing it to think in a more positive way, that's how you'll begin to start to see the change in your whole thinking. Same thing with feeling the noise through your head. I mean, many times a swirl starts inside your mind when things are starting to happen around you. Try to feed them with positive energy, like you are capable. Mm-hmm. I can do this. These things will work out. I'm allowed to make a mistake. It's those supporting elements between accepting a compliment, clearing out the noise that should get you to a much clearer place to think about that decision or that action you have to take.
Right. I said to you during the break that, and I kind of think these go, insecurity and paranoia go hand in hand, but paranoia is another of the emotions that you cover. You devote a whole chapter to it. Give us some insights into what a paranoid leader is doing and just how destructive that can be.
Sure. And, you know, let me first define the difference. Some people think paranoia and insecurity are the same, and they're really not, because the paranoia feels that others are talking about them, and the insecure is actually talking to themselves about themselves. So that's the major shift. And a paranoid leader or a paranoid person who's trying to make a decision always feels as if someone is out to either get them, quote unquote, or not make them succeed. So it's the type of thing where they have to feel comfortable in their own skin, if you will. You have to be able to think that if there's a group of people in a room, they're not talking about you. Or if they are, it doesn't have to be that it's negative. So it's one of those things that as a paranoid person, you're a little isolated. You don't mingle well. You don't interact as well, because every one of those steps require you to interact with someone. And that's where the paranoia really starts to form itself. So your communications won't be strong. Your ability to build relationships won't be as strong. And that's, of course, extremely important in any sort of, if you're in business leadership, right, to be able to make decisions and communicate, or in any sort of relationship, you need to have that ability to interact. That's where it really cripples them.
And that's an interesting way to look at it, because I had always, until I read your book, kind of grouped insecure and paranoid. Oh, they're paranoid because they're insecure. But as you said, paranoia is I doubt you, and insecurity is I doubt myself. Good distinction there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what?
Go ahead.
No, then when you clear those, you're able to define which one is actually impacting you, because the tools to work around them are very different.
Okay. Now, I read Steve Jobs' biography not long after he passed away. Known, obviously, for a great innovator, not always such a great team player or leader. Could be very harsh at times. Tell us a little bit about why you think he was so successful, given some of the bad press that he received on leadership.
Well, it's kind of hard because I don't know, obviously, him personally, but I would imagine we all see why he was successful. He was able to stay very resilient on something he felt so strongly about and really push through it. And someone who's arrogant, and a healthy arrogant emotion, will be resilient, will be very confident in what they're doing, which will get people to follow, and you become a strong leader. Because when you have the confidence combined with the passion, you will listen to that person. Where it may cause it to become a unhealthy emotion, where we call head trash arrogance, well, that's when it really takes over and it really forces you not to interact as well or give people an opportunity to have an opinion. So in a work setting, I would imagine that there were filters that supported Steve Jobs' ability to work with all the groups of people within such a very large organization that helped his confidence and resilience in the passion of what he believed in to remain a healthy form of arrogance and not tip it over to the other side, which can make it an area of very zombie-like employees. People don't think outside the box anymore. They're not energized to have an opinion because their opinion in their mind won't count if you're working with an arrogant leader. And quite honestly, that's not some of the things you hear from, you know, his success story. So I'd imagine there was a way to balance that, because these emotions are in all of us, and he might have had arrogance as one of the more prominent ones, but he balanced it so that the unhealthy arrogance didn't take over his decision-making and allow for a successful business road.
Right. Fear is another one of your emotions that you cover in the book. What are the top two fears that you see as you work with clients?
You know, fear is interesting because it's something we probably all have in us. You were all afraid to do something, right? And that's natural. It's when we are so afraid or have the fear that we do nothing. So one aspect of a fear head trash is where you don't make any decisions. You just let them sit because the fear of being wrong, the fear of not making the right choice is too much, and doing nothing is the better of the option. That's a fear head trash, and one which, you know, is stifling for an organization or someone in making decisions. The other is when you're fearful of hiring, say, or bringing on folks that have a different skill set or more advanced skill set. And that would in turn then not make you look as smart, if you will. And the fear of not hiring, building teams with very strong skill sets could be another way that it can cripple you because you're fearful of them being smarter than you.
Right. So one of the ways that somebody who is fearful, let's say you're working with a boss that you believe is fearful, how could I approach that person to try and allay some of those fears? Can I?
Well, can you? I guess you can, right? Because if you don't have your own head trash going into it, you can certainly attempt it. But I think it's really helping that person become aware. And self-awareness is the key element of this book, is to help them become aware that fear is stopping either the organization or our team from succeeding. And you probably wouldn't use the words, hey, we're stifled and we're not moving forward because we're not making a decision. But you certainly could highlight what's not happening, where some of the pain points are, why we're not able to make progress. And it all will stem back to because we need to know if it's a yes or no answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be one way to approach it where you can help that person recognize so they can sit there for a second and say, ooh, I am the one holding the cards. I have to decide to fold or hold. What should I do?
Right. I think fear cripples a lot of people very negatively. I have a little cartoon that I blew up and I framed and put it in my studio, and it's a Pooh cartoon. And Pooh says to Piglet, what if the tree falls down on top of us? And Piglet thinks about it for a moment and he goes, what if it doesn't? And Pooh was comforted by that. That's the cartoon. But I've often pointed to that when people come to me, what if, you know, when it's a scared if, what if?
No, and it's a perfect example. You know, it's interesting. We created a website that's headtrash911.com. And why I bring that up is we put together a video where each of the seven head trashes are highlighted as an example of what they would look like in the real world. And one of them, which is the fear one that I'm bringing up, the young lady saying, they want me to make a decision that impacts 1,000 people and going to cost millions of dollars. I can't do that. I might be wrong. So I think I'll do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an example of how can a head trash manifest itself into an everyday decision-making scenario, which then you can see why things may be happening. So people might want to, you know, take a look at that to really see how we've shown you what these look like in everyday. And we also offer an online survey, which is free. It's about a 15-minute commitment. You answer 28 questions, and what comes back is an automatic survey on which of the seven head trashes you score the highest. And then we have a rating scale to show you what that scale will show you in a decision-making or any sort of situation. How can it impede you? What will you start to see signs of? So almost like an educator as to, oh boy, I came out with arrogance and I scored a 7. What does 7 tell me on the Richter scale? And, you know, it's very interesting because as I see them come in, because we do just see who takes them, you know, people are probably taking a look at which ones do I have. So you could pick up the book in any bookstore as of May 7th or jump on Amazon and pick it up online. But you can also run to our website and just take a tip in the toe a little bit of to see how it would play for you and see if the Head Trash Index tells you anything about yourself.
Yeah, sounds good. And before I let you go today, you are human. Timothy Thomas, who wrote the book with you, is also human. What kind of head trash have you had to deal with yourself? I remember reading that you used to promise your new clients way back when, if you don't feel differently on how you're making decisions after 30 days, I'm doing something wrong. And that created all kinds of pressure for you.
You know, it's funny. We have an instrument we created for our workshops, and we did a program where I took it myself because I wanted to test it for the, you know, how another person would feel. Because I'm like everyone else. I have every one of these head trashes. Some are more prevalent than others, which why writing the book was so enlightening even for me as a person. And mine was anger. And mine was anger not because I'm an angry person, but I'm a fighter. So I always believe there's an answer. I always believe you have to keep trying. I don't take no for an answer. So my anger head trash obviously can overwhelm me. And my husband and two children will probably admit to seeing it overwhelm me at times. But for the most part, my drive, my belief that there's always a way, you must keep trying, is part of my anger head trash. So when it's healthy, I can keep you motivated and get you to that tough zone. When it's not and it becomes unhealthy, I'm probably not the funnest person to be around.
Okay. Well, we'll keep that one in mind. But the website is great. There's great information up there. There's that test that you can take too. The book is coming out on May 7th. So if you're interested in taking a look at head trash and getting rid of those demons that fill up your head, Timothy L.I. Thomas, excuse me, and Tish Squalero are the authors on that. And it's available May 7th. So you can pre-order if you choose. Final thought that you want to leave our listeners with?
Please take a look at either checking out the website or reading the book, because it will give you a perspective on self-awareness. And I think as long as we all are aware of how we interact and how we make our decisions, things will start to click and you'll be able to have a bigger and better perspective on going through the tough times. Because that's when it really matters.
Great.
But I hope you get to pick it up.
Great. Thank you so much. Tish Squalero, appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Vicki. Take care.
And the book, again, is Head Trash. And you can find more about both authors at headtrash911.com. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back with Ajay and Boris. And if that name sounds familiar, you'll find out why when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him opening his own clothing store at the age of 18? 1 in 138,000. Excited to be a part of pop culture, he packed for the big city. The odds of finding someone to invest in his vision? 1 in 4.5 million. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Coming in May on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We all need friends in life, but sometimes the people you call friends are the ones who drive you crazy, and you may not even realize it. We'll share how to spot the crazy makers in your life and how to reduce the stress and drama of dealing with them. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And check out conversationslive.net for more than 200 podcasts with experts who can help you live well, live strong.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has a new Facebook page, so you can see what's happening on our show and what we're up to between shows. Like us on Facebook and look out for upcoming contest drawings.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my next guest is somebody that I've seen many times. I see him almost every week, in fact, but we've never actually spoken until today, other than hi, because I'm rushing out of the studio as he is rushing into the studio. And his name, of course, is Ajayan Boris. He's the author of Effortless Mind. He's traveled the globe exploring human potential practices and is the host of Mind Matters Radio, which follows our show right at 1 o'clock on KKNW. He teaches workshops and retreats on meditation and spiritual relationships near Seattle and in the Himalayas. And you can visit him online at ajayan.com. Ajayan Boris, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Vicki. It's great to be here, just a little earlier than usual.
Finally, we get to talk today because we really do rush in and out like passing ships there. So you've written this book called Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. But before we get to this is a great book, by the way. Before we get there, I want to just take us back a few years or so and talk about how you grew up, what you were like as a kid, as a teenager.
Oh, my.
And maybe how that influenced your path into meditation, if
well,
it did.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a great question. I think it's kind of interesting. I as a child, you know, I was actually raised Catholic, and I think that had some, positive effect for me. I know a lot of people have sort of, bad experiences in having been raised a Catholic.
Right.
I've heard various stories. Mine, on the other hand, were fairly positive. But I think that it did kind of instill, a sense of, sort of a belief, an innate belief in a higher power and just some good values that I think that served me well. But still, by the time I got to high school, I was anything but what you would call a spiritual person. That wasn't my interest. In fact, I was in high school in the 60s. And at that time, it was kind of wild and crazy. And I was not adverse to experimenting with whatever was happening at those times. And so actually, probably the thing that really put me on my path was an experience that I had on a psychedelic drug. And this was in a really, in my senior year of high school, I was, tripping on this drug, and I actually transcended. What I now see was what I transcended to these deeper and deeper levels of the mind, and transcended the finest level, and found myself absolutely disappeared. Actually, there wasn't a self. There was just infinitude. It was like being, if you were the sun, let's say, and instead of just light and energy, your being was composed of intelligence and energy and bliss and love. And so you're this shining sun of intelligence, bliss, and energy and love. And yet, even if you were, you know how vast the sun is, right? I mean, you can fit hundreds of Earths in the sun. So it's just vast. So imagine that immensity of that intelligence and love and energy. And yet, even then, there would be an end to your being where you end and space begins. So let's say you were a trillion suns like that. Still, there would be, even in that immensity, there would be an end. Well, this was like that, only it was there was no end. It was infinite energy, infinite intelligence, infinite bliss, infinite joy, whatever, love. And it just was within that entire expanse, there wasn't even a faintest impulse of activity. So this is what I experienced on this drug experience. And I came off of that. And from that experience, like I say, it was the beginning of my path, because from that point, I knew, for one thing, I knew that, you know, a drug can't create infinity.
Right.
So this transcended the drug. It just somehow gave me a glimpse into something that was the truth beyond the drug. And secondly, it was very much imprinted on my being that I had to, that there was the possibility of experiencing this 24/7, that this was the goal of human life, that this didn't just exist, you know, for the sake of existing. It was something that was directly related to human life, and that we could experience this somehow and grow to that state of enlightenment where that was your reality. So I knew that, even though I hadn't had any exposure to ideas of enlightenment or anything like that. And finally, I knew that that to achieve that meant kind of purifying yourself and somehow normalizing in the highest sense of the word, where you didn't have any, I don't know how to express it, so twists and turns in your being. Like somehow everything had to be just really harmonious and a state of real harmony. And so that was what I came away from that experience with. And then shortly after that, I happened to pick up a Bhagavad Gita, which is a scripture from India. And I was amazed because it was like I had written it. And it was so familiar with me. And then I picked up some Tibetan books and the same thing. So then I entered college then the following fall and learned to meditate. And from then on, I was on that path. So that was a real pivotal experience that came in my childhood, my high school years.
Now, you spent some time in India with a person who is known as the Hugging Saint.
Oh, yeah.
What drove you to go to India?
Well, okay, so I had, long before that, shortly after I went into college, I started studying with Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, the founder of TM, and I learned to teach that. I taught that for about 10, 12 years. And then I sort of left that organization and started studying with different teachers. And one that I happened upon was Amma. And I don't know, but probably most of our listeners here in Seattle area have at least heard of her because she comes through Seattle every year. But she's really a wonderful embodiment of that divine feminine energy. And when just to meet her is a wonderful experience. You feel that, you know, she hugs you. You get that feeling of being charged with this wonderful divine feminine love. And so it's a, and a lot of people will just burst into tears. It's just a very interesting experience. Well, we are, myself and my wife and my kids, you know, would meet her every year when she came. And one year she needed a place to stay. And so we invited her to our home and she stayed with us with her entourage. And she did that for several years when she was in Seattle. And so we grew close to her. And then we decided, you know, we want more of this. So we sold everything and moved to her ashram in southern India. And there we lived for 4 years.
Oh, you took the whole family.
Yeah, we took the whole family. We were
cool.
There for 4 years. And I was the ashram meditation teacher. So that was wonderful. And then when she would go, Amma would go on her world tours, I would head up to the Himalayas and study with some of the other holy men and yogis up there. So it was a really great 4 years, very formative in terms of learning, you know, many practices that I now teach and that express in this book, Effortless Mind.
And so then why did you come back, and how great a shock was it coming back to Western culture?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In India, I have to say, you know, I love so much about India and have great respect for the spiritual tradition, but it wasn't an easy place for us to live. I mean, it was incredibly hot. You just wouldn't believe. And we were at the very southern tip of India, which is almost to the equator, the very hottest part of India. And it's, you know, in the hot season, wow, you just wouldn't believe it. So that was one thing. So many people. There were a number of factors that made it less than comfortable. So it was kind of this being in this blissful atmosphere of living with a saint and in a spiritual community. It was really wonderful. And then at the same time, just the sort of physical challenges of being there. And also, I think it wasn't really dharmic, so to speak, for me to just hang out in India for much longer than I did. You know, it was, we have different phases in our life, and you kind of follow your nose, and it takes you, you know, where you're meant to be. And I think eventually after 4 years there, it was time to come back, both for my kids, like my oldest daughter had to finish high school. And so it was time. And so we came back. And yes, there was, you know, actually, when you come back here after being in India, in some ways, it's like heaven here. It's very comfortable. Everything is so clean and beautiful and green. And, you know, it's really amazing.
Plumbing is good.
The plumbing is good, right? Yeah, so there's so many things that are really wonderful here. And so that part was good. But the culture was a bit jarring, you know, just being on the freeway and traffic and stuff like that was difficult. So I kind of went through a, you know, sort of, what are those tanks that deep sea divers have to go in? Decompression.
Decompression.
I lived sort of out in the middle of nowhere for a couple of years, just teaching small meditation classes to decompress and gradually ease my way back into Western culture.
Oh, right. That was a good idea, probably. Well, we're going to take a very quick break, and I'm going to ask Eric to play us out with one of my CDs. It's called Eternal Om. And there's a reason that I'm asking him to play us out and back in, because I'm going to ask Ajay and Boris what he thinks about Eternal Om. When we come back, you'll listen to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Ajay and Boris, and his book is called Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Earth Pet and Issaquah, we cover the world of animals. This week, May 5th, it's a special Vet Sunday. Board-certified veterinary ophthalmologist Dr. Tom Sullivan from the Animal Eye Clinic in Seattle joins us. Not only does he treat the eyes of our companion animal friends, he also works on zoo animals, exotics, wildlife, fish, and reptiles. Great stories, advice, and education, plus open phone lines. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my special guest in this segment is Ajay and Boris. He is, of course, another KKNW host who follows our show. So when we end, stay tuned, and you'll be hearing from Ajay and himself. I asked Eric to play us back Out to Break and Back with Eternal Ohm. It's a CD that I picked up. I want to just share this story very quickly with you. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I work with a lot of different people, and several years ago now, I was working with a group that was particularly aggressive, and it was really getting my hair standing on end. Mm. And I had to rush out in the middle of the day to pick up a gift for a friend, and she wanted crystal. So I went to a crystal shop, and I was stressed out. I'd had to drive through the traffic at, you know, rush hour in Bellevue. I'd had no lunch. There were meetings up the wazoo. Everybody wanted everything yesterday. I get into this crystal shop and I'm like, move out of my way. I'm on a mission. And they were playing this Eternal Ohm. And I remember thinking, God, who'd want to listen to Eternal Ohm for, you know, a whole CD? Guess who bought it on the way out? I had calmed right down.
Wonderful.
I had calmed right down and everything was well with the world. Mm-hmm. But I was really interested to see or read that you said, the vibration, as we know, of the monks is the closest to pure being. Mm-hmm. And it is not a good idea for us to continually resonate in that vibration. You call it the unmanifest. And you say your life would begin to reflect the character of the unmanifest. Talk mm-hmm. to us about that.
Well, you know, this may be a point of some debate. Even in India, it's probably a point of some debate. But there, it makes a lot of sense to me, and I notice this effect when I meet people who are really into using Om in their meditations and such. It's just that, as you mentioned, Om is now the word Om. It's just a word, but the vibration that Om represents, you know, and that is the inner essence of Om, is the primordial sound. That's like the vibration of the absolute as it's just warming up and coming into manifestation. So it's as close as you can get to the vibration of the unmanifest before creation. So when you, you know, use this as a mantra day in and day out and you're meditating on Om all the time, then it, like you said, you know, that vibration has an effect on your being and you will start to be drawn very strongly within, like your personality will become much more inward and your interest in engaging in the world and in things of the world will be less and less because you're developing this affinity for just the unmanifest, which is beautiful, you know, and it's perfect for those who want to renounce the world, who want to have no interest in the world, monks and nuns say, and this is why that's a very popular mantra in India, where there's such strong traditions of renunciation. There are mantras that are much more better suited to those of us in the world that will still give you this experience of the depth of meditation and of your own being, but at the same time will have a kind of enlivening effect on all the other layers of your mind so that you'll still be interested in the world. You'll have that creative self-expression that will be important to you. And so it's kind of you get both that inner and outer enrichment. And so those mantras are more suited for most Westerners.
That's so interesting. I do listen to that when I'm in a hyper state, as mm-hmm. I'm prone to get sometimes.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And I have to pull myself in to focus. And mm-hmm. but then after a while I just want to turn it off.
Uh-huh. Enough is enough.
Enough is enough. But that is interesting. I listen to that or the sounds of the ocean. Mm-hmm. It has the same kind of effect on
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful.
So let's talk a little about the book, Effortless Mind, Meditate mm-hmm. with Ease. Why you've written other books. Why did you want to put this one together?
Well, good question. You know, for years actually people had, because I've been teaching meditation for almost, well, over 40 years now. And many times I'd been asked, you know, is there a good companion book for your class? And I really was at a loss to recommend one. If you try reading different books on meditation, you'll just find so many differences. And sometimes the practices seem a little complicated or
right,
the
right.
explanations kind of awkward. So I didn't have one that I really felt good about. And then finally, it was actually on my show. Where I was interviewing Mark Allen. I don't know if you've ever interviewed him. He's the mm-hmm. the founder of New World Library and the author of a number of books himself. And he said, during a break, he said, Jayan, I went to your website and I just loved it. You've got to write a book. And I see it now.
That's every writer's dream.
I know. He said, I see it now. Meditate with effortless mind. Meditate with ease. You know, that's on my website. And so then I said, well, you know, I can hardly argue with that. You've got the owner of a publishing house that I had actually sent manuscripts to previously that they had turned down. And here he is telling me I have to write a book. Well, okay. So that's kind of, he was the one who basically manifested the book, which is what he writes about, is manifestation. So that was interesting.
I really like this book. I've looked at a lot of books on meditation. We've had several guests talk about meditation. I think some of them have meditated too much. Is there such a thing as too much meditation?
Yeah, for sure. You want balance in all things, you know. And so meditation, you're going within. You're experiencing that sort of, you know, vastness of that inner creative potential within you. But then it's really important that we come out and integrate that potential into our personality, the way our mind works, the way our heart works, everything, even our physical functioning, so that our body becomes healthier. So there's a kind of growth really happens in two phases. One, you go within, and two, you come out and you act to integrate that, and you act mindfully, you know. So that's really important. So if you just went in all the time, it wouldn't serve you. If you went to a cave and meditated for years and years and years, you could still come out and somebody would say something and you could just react and get all angry or whatever. That happens all the time. You see that in India with these yogis who do that. So too much meditation, yeah, you need balance, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How important is it that we begin, you talk about this in the book, but how important is it that we begin our meditation with intention, setting our intention?
You know, again, that's a point for some debate. Some people would say you just meditate and you're getting that deep rest and the relaxation and all the benefits of meditation will come. But, you know, there is another point to it. And that is, I like the Buddhist way of thinking about meditation, and that they feel it's really important to meditate with this intention of helping others. So that meditation isn't just self-serving. Sure, you deserve that time and you should take it for yourself. And there's no question about that. But at the same time, if you're meditating with the recognition that by going within, you can spread an influence into the world that's uplifting and joyful and so on, then you're getting even more out of your meditation, ironically, because now it's a selfless impulse.
I like that philosophy too. I like that approach too. We don't have much time left, Ajahn, but I wanted to ask you this. You say meditation begins to soften and melt the boundaries of ego that create separation, that make you see the world as entirely other than yourself. Talk to us a little about that.
Well, that's kind of, you know, the hallmark of enlightenment in a way is that, I mean, there's many different aspects to enlightenment. We could talk about that for quite some time, but one of the highest points of enlightenment is that this state of ego separation that we find ourselves in, you know, where I am separate from the world, and this sense that others are kind of objects to my perception and I am the subject, which can, you know, in extreme cases can cause us to treat people badly because we don't empathize, for instance. Well, one benefit of enlightenment is that you have the recognition that not only am I this unbounded pure consciousness, but you are also that. In fact, all this is that. And so there's this absolute love and respect and honoring of everything as much as you would your own self. And that's kind of that golden rule. You know, it's actually experiencing the essence of the golden rule, which is, you know, not treat others as you would yourself. It's actually seeing that others are your very self. So that's a beautiful point of enlightenment. And that takes, you know, that constant practice of meditation softens those boundaries that keep us separate from others.
Mm. Well, I could talk to you for a lot longer, but we are out of time, unfortunately. Very quickly, what would you like people to take away from your book?
Well, just that, you know, of course, we've heard so much about the benefits of meditation, but we often think that it's difficult. Meditation is easy. In fact, you know, get the book, read it, you'll find it's the easiest thing you've ever done. And so that's, I guess, the main takeaway.
Thank you so much, Ajahn Boris. And you can stay tuned and hear Ajahn in just a few minutes. And I want to remind you, the book is called Effortless Mind. It's called Meditate with Ease. Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. And you can find out more about Ajayan at ajayan.com. And we will be back next week. If you have questions or comments on today's show, there are several ways you can reach me. You can tweet me at Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. Post a message on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Let us know what you're up to. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can email me at info@conversationslive.net. That's info@conversationslive.net. And of course, we have our 800 number if you want to call. 800-495-7617. 495-7617. Until next week, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.